Hello, Podheads. Welcome back to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. I'm Kylie Caldwell.
And I'm Holly Spear.
And this is a little insider knowledge, but the girls and I often talk or vent about abandoning cases that we started researching for a multitude of reasons. And
Yup.
this is one I abandoned for a good reason. It was in the midst of the trials when I was writing it, but that's ended, so I can provide some closure. This is the case of Brittany Drexel, a bright 17-year-old girl who went missing on a spring break trip she was never supposed to go on.
This case sounds a little familiar to me. The name does. We'll see if I know it.
I feel like it was pretty big in the true crime media sphere when it was unsolved. I haven't seen a lot of people cover it since it has been solved. So Brittany, spelled Brittanee, was born on October 7th, 1991, in Rochester, New York, and spent most of her life there. Her parents, John and Dawn, were both teenagers when Brittany was born. They never got married, but they co-parented well and did everything they could to care for their baby girl. Brittany was born with persistent hyperplastic primary vitreous in her right eye, which basically means her right eye did not develop fully in the womb. Or at least that's what I could gather from the Google response. It's rare, but luckily nothing too crazy. Her vision was impaired and her eye did tend to wander, but she often wore contact lenses to correct this. Later on, Brittany's mom, Dawn, ended up marrying a man named Chad Drexel, who adopted Brittany, thus the surname change. Chad was in the military and they bounced around a bit. Brittany ended up becoming an older sister to Marissa and a little brother, Camden. After Chad left the military, the family settled in Chilly, New York, which is a suburb of Rochester. Brittany was now attending Gates Chilly High School and she was thriving. She was popular, she was a star soccer player, she got good grades. Her family and friends described her as the life of the party, always in a good mood and ready to have a good time. But she was also very strong-willed and sassy, like most 17-year-old girls, and not afraid to do what she wanted and to speak her mind, which leads us to spring break of 2009. It's Brittany's junior year, and I'm sure, like all of us, she thought at that age she's basically an adult. She knows best, because I sure did think the same thing at the time.
Oh, for sure.
So all of her friends are traveling for spring break. They're going out of town, out of state, and she wanted to go too. She asked her mom if she could go with a group of girls to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Her mom was like, "Hell no. It's way too far away. There's no adults going, and a group of 17-year-olds traveling out of state is not a good idea." Dawn also later said she just had this premonition that if Brittany went, something bad would happen. We see this a lot, moms having this like bad vibes of something happening, and it does. And it made me wonder, do moms have superpowers?
I feel like there is some kind of mother's intuition. There's probably a ton of times that it's not right, but I feel like I would be hesitant to let my kid do something like this and just expect something not good would happen. But I think they do have an intuition.
But Brittany was not having this. It caused a big fight. How dare her mom not let her go? Everyone else is going. But she came up with a compromise, asking her mom if instead she could go with a different group of girls to a lake house on Lake Ontario. Their parents would be there, and it wasn't too far away. This sounded like a better idea, so Dawn agreed and saw her daughter pack a bag and drive off with these girls. But of course, they were not going to Lake Ontario. The group started driving down to Myrtle Beach. They left on April 22nd, and it took 3 days to make the trek, finally arriving on the 25th. After checking into the Bar Harbor Hotel, Brittany called her mom to say spring break was going well. They were chilling at the beach. Dawn didn't think anything of this. She just assumed they were chilling on the beach at the lake, something they had all done before. The only person back home that knew Brittany was in Myrtle Beach was her boyfriend, John. They kept in constant contact, texting nonstop the entire trip. It's only the first day there, but Brittany was already texting John about how she wasn't having any fun. Everyone was underage. There wasn't much to do. The girls she went with were doing drugs, something she didn't partake in. So I don't know who these girls are, but from what I inferred, these weren't like super close friends of hers. It just happened to be a group of girls from the same school that were going to Myrtle Beach, and she just kind of tagged along. So she decides to go off and do her own thing. Luckily, Brittany did know one other person in town, Peter Brazowitz. He's a 20-year-old nightclub promoter that she knew back from Rochester, and he was there with friends. So I know I didn't know you could be a nightclub promoter if you were under the age of 21.
Yeah, seems like you'd have to be allowed in a nightclub to
Promote
do
said
that
nightclub.
job. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, the same day she arrived, the 25th, Brittany texted her boyfriend John that she was going to go see Peter and hang out with him and his friends for a bit. She left her hotel around 8 p.m. and began to walk 1.5 miles south down South Ocean Boulevard to his hotel, the Blue Water Resort. CCTV from the area showed Brittany walking there by herself, wearing a black and white tank top, shorts, and flip-flops. Cameras also showed her leaving the hotel around 8:45 p.m., so she wasn't there for very long. She's still texting the boyfriend John this entire time, and the last thing they talked about was Brittany going back to her hotel to return the shorts she was wearing and had borrowed from another girl in the group. Then, suddenly, at 9:15 p.m., the text stopped. John waited 10 minutes, still no response. He sent another text, waited, and again, nothing. After 30 minutes, John started to freak out. He started to call everyone he knew in that group, but no one had seen or heard from Brittany since she had left earlier. John is even more freaked out now, and he texts Brittany one last time, telling her if she doesn't answer and show that she's safe, he's going to call her mom and tell her where she really is. Brittany didn't respond to this either, so John calls her mom, Dawn, and that's when she found out where her daughter really was. Immediately, everyone packs up the car and starts driving to South Carolina. They called the Rochester Police Department, who were like, "Well, she didn't go missing here. You need to call the Myrtle Beach Police." They called them, and the police there were like, "Well, she might just be out at a bar. She might be hanging out on the beach. You know, she's in the water. Her phone's back on shore. Her phone might have died. Who knows? No big deal." It's only been a couple hours at this point, but still, the family was not having this. And luckily, John had a friend in North Carolina who drove down to Myrtle Beach to file a missing persons report, since it would take some time for the rest of them to get down there.
I can't imagine her parents figuring out what's going on. Like, that has to be just completely shocking. I'm like, what the heck?
At first, I feel like you'd be very livid,
Yeah.
and then you'd be very scared.
Yep.
The police started their search the next morning, starting with talking to Brittany's friends and going through CCTV footage from the hotel. According to police, they also interviewed Peter and his friends, saying no one could be ruled out yet. But weirdly, according to a lot of reports I saw, Peter and his friends had left Myrtle Beach before police even got word that Brittany was missing. The report said that Peter and his friends left around 2 a.m. on the 26th, leaving abruptly and going back to Rochester. They even had left their clothing and belongings back in the hotel.
Yeah, red flags.
According to Peter, one of the friends in the group's mom called and told them they had to come back ASAP. I don't know what's true or not, if the police talked to them at all at that point, or I don't know if they just called them. Who knows? Either way, Peter lawyered up as soon as he got back to Rochester, obviously raising some eyebrows. Police didn't seem to hone in on him, though. There's footage of Brittany leaving the hotel by herself. Peter nor anyone else in the room followed her out. The cameras on South Ocean Boulevard, of course, did not cover every square inch, especially in 2009, but it seemed like Brittany just vanished into thin air somewhere on this walk back to her hotel. Investigators decide the best way to track down a teen girl is to go through her cell phone records, but this made things weirder. After her final text to boyfriend John, Brittany's cell phone then pinged 6 miles from the Blue Water Resort at Surfside Beach at 9:27 p.m. The next ping wasn't until 11:58 p.m., 46 miles away at the North Santee River along US 17. The last ping was even further, 50 to 60 miles from the hotel at a boat landing on the river, right near the Georgetown-Charleston County line.
Does she have her car with her?
No, yes. So that's what made it weird. And cops immediately were like, okay, she's not out at a bar, or she's not back at a hotel with some guy. Clearly,
Yeah.
something has happened to her.
Yeah. She doesn't have a boat there, so.
Nope. So they descended to the area where the last phone ping was, 50 officers deep, with canines, helicopters, and boats. The area was combed through extensively for 11 days straight, but not a single thing was found. None of Brittany's clothing items, cell phone, and of course, not her. By now, Brittany's disappearance was national headlines. Billboards were going up, the FBI was getting involved, and Brittany's parents were doing everything they could to find her. Her mom, Dawn, had a theory pretty early on. She believed that her daughter was lured to Myrtle Beach to be trafficked. She was very adamant about going with people she wasn't that close with. She might have been lured with a modeling job, something Brittany was interested in doing. The Myrtle Beach police gave zero credibility to this theory. I do give them one point, though. They had all her cell phone records. There was no, like, weird contacts or anyone trying to get her to come to Myrtle Beach. But they also said that there is little to no trafficking in the Myrtle Beach area. And this is a flat-out lie. Horry County, where Myrtle Beach is the number one location for reported trafficking in the state.
So they just made that up?
Yeah, it doesn't really happen here, but it's also the number one spot where it does happen, I guess.
Yeah, there's a big difference. Okay.
Yeah. Police went on a different route, interviewing sex offenders in the area and checking out abandoned buildings near the last cell phone ping. Meanwhile, Dawn permanently moved to Myrtle Beach to search herself. By now, it's been months without a single clue. She put money in Brittany's bank account, feverishly checking to see if any of it would be withdrawn, and it never was. Dawn even went on Dr. Phil, calling out Peter and his possible involvement. He vehemently denied harming Brittany and expressed how frustrated he was that his reputation had been damaged over the allegations. He said the only reason he hired an attorney was the constant questioning by police, which scared him. In October, Brittany's dad, Chad, got a phone call from Brittany. But it wasn't Brittany. The cell phone company had already given her number to someone else.
Oh, yeah. I feel like maybe they should have held off on that for the investigation, but...
In December of 2009, the Myrtle Beach Police Department announced they had three or four persons of interest. And that's all they said. No names, no reasonings. And after this, the case appeared, at least publicly, to go cold. In 2011, however, there was a break in our first public suspect, all thanks to a jailhouse informant. Taquan Brown reported that in 2009, he had gone to a stash house run by Timothy Taylor and his dad to give them some money. According to Taquan, as soon as he walked in the house, he witnessed Timothy assaulting Brittany. Taquan kept going with his plan and started talking to Timothy's dad out in the backyard. At this point, Taquan said Brittany had escaped and ran into the backyard, but Timothy caught up with her, hit her in the face with a pistol, and drug her back into the house. He then said shortly after, he heard two gunshots. After this, he saw them drag out a body wrapped up in a rug and dump it into a pond filled with alligators.
Jeez.
Very elaborate story.
Who are these people to Brittany? Does she have any sort of connection to them at all?
Zero connection.
Cases do get solved by jailhouse informants, but I'm always a little skeptical for obvious reasons.
Yes. So according to Taquan, he gave a lot of interviews about this publicly also, which is weird. But he claimed that he actually saw Brittany at this house four separate times, and he didn't recognize her until the second or third time. And the fourth time was the day she was killed. So investigators looked into all this story, and they thought it was credible. They said his description of the house checked out, the pond checked out, but I guess they didn't, or I know they didn't search the pond, but another informant who didn't know Taquan at all gave police a similar story, saying Timothy had abducted Brittany to sell her into trafficking. He got scared when her disappearance got so much attention that he just killed her instead.
Did these informants know each other?
No.
Weird. Okay. Because the first time when you said police took it as credible, I think that's odd because they would have her cell phone records, I guess, right? To see if she was at their house.
Yeah. So they had the cell phone pings and didn't show them at her or at their house. I couldn't figure out where the stash house is.
Gotcha.
If it's in that area or not.
Yeah. And I think like last episode we talked about like how cell phone pings are not always exactly like you can see a general location, sometimes not exactly where they are. I think maybe sometimes you can see exactly where they are, but sometimes it's just like they're within this general area, within this range.
Yeah, especially in 2009, like we don't have like Find My Friends or whatever that shows like where even in the house someone is.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like triangulates between cell phone towers. So, and that could be miles.
Right. Right.
So investigators want to talk to this guy, Timothy Taylor, about all this. This is their first good lead, but they had to move strategically. This is something I'm not sure I agree with. You'll have to let me know what you think, Holly. But around this time, Timothy is finishing up state probation for being a getaway driver during a robbery of a McDonald's. So his pro once his probation is complete, sentence is done. But then federal prosecutors then charge Timothy with interfering in interstate commerce by threat or violence stemming from this McDonald's robbery.
Seems repetitive.
Seems like double jeopardy clause, anyone?
Question mark?
Timothy's lawyers are obviously wondering the same thing. Apparently, there is a loophole, though, a federal law that allows the federal government to charge someone for a crime that the state has already adjudicated if the federal government believes the state prosecution led to an unfair outcome.
Don't remember that little part of the bar, I guess, but.
That never came up, did it?
No.
So, in this case, all of Timothy's co-defendants received prison time. So, that's the federal prosecutor's argument. He got probation, everyone else got prison time. But one of his co-defendants shot a cashier twice. I'm not saying Timothy's innocent, he was definitely involved, but he was in the car the whole time.
Okay.
I think it's fair to say the sentencing is going to be a little different between these
Yeah.
guys. His defense team called out the federal prosecutor, saying this is only happening because of the Brittany Drexel case, which the federal prosecutor admitted to. So that's a big question. Should the federal government be allowed to charge and prosecute someone for a crime that has already been dealt with on the state level? I get it in some cases, but the federal prosecutor like admitted they're only doing this because his name came up in the Brittany Drexel case.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, that doesn't make sense, but that makes sense why it doesn't make sense.
While the federal government was allowed to charge Timothy, the judge held off on sentencing him to await an important Supreme Court hearing, the case of Gamble v. United States. In that case, Terrence Gamble was prosecuted in both Alabama at the state level and at the federal level for being a felon in possession of a firearm. He argued that this violated double jeopardy, but the Supreme Court, in a 7-2 decision, affirmed his two convictions, stating the double jeopardy clause does not apply to the prosecution of the same crime under both state and federal laws. Luckily, this doesn't happen super often. Personally, not a fan. Anyways, that was the law school lecture of the day. Anyways, after this decision, Timothy ended up pleading guilty. There wasn't going to be a way out of this. As part of his plea bargain negotiations, Timothy had to undergo polygraph testing about Brittany's disappearance. During this testing, Timothy admitted that he had heard two people talk about who had Brittany's cell phone, but he said he didn't know anything else about it or where she was. Every important question about her whereabouts was flagged for deceptive answers. However, the FBI also interviewed Timothy's dad, Sean, who, according to this informant, was also at the house. Sean denied any involvement as well, but he had receipts. Him and Timothy were at a car show hours away that night. Another thing, at the time Brittany disappeared, Timothy was 16. He weighed at most 100 pounds, and he also has one arm. So, not saying it's impossible, but definitely difficult for someone built like that to kidnap another human being.
Especially if they're miles away.
With all of that, Timothy ended up being sentenced to time served, and investigators had nothing else to add to their case file. So that whole thing was a complete waste of time. No new evidence against
Gotcha.
him for Brittany. Can't necessarily clear him, but nothing new. In March of 2024, Timothy ended up filing a lawsuit against the FBI for falsely going after him and his dad, ruining their reputation and relationships in the community. The lawsuit was dismissed this year because the FBI has immunity, but the Taylor family only wants an apology. The Taylor family really didn't catch a break until May of 2022 when the real perpetrator was found, leading to the discovery of Brittany's remains 13 years after her disappearance. Brittany's killer was a man named Raymond Moody, and he was on police's radar pretty early on in 2011 when tips came in saying, "Hey, look into him. This sounds like something Raymond would do."
Oh.
Well, this was because Raymond was a registered sex offender living at the Sunset Lodge in Georgetown, which, if you remember, is the town where Brittany's cell phone last pinged. Investigators did search his room at the lodge. Nothing was found. They also talked to Raymond, who had an alibi. He claimed he was out of town when Brittany disappeared. And this was good enough for police. They didn't look into anything until after Timothy Taylor was cleared. It was only then did they realize, oh shit, Raymond wasn't out of town. He got a traffic ticket in Surfside Beach on April 26th, the same day the searches began.
I wish it wouldn't have taken them this long to realize this.
Which is like their information. It's in their system.
Yeah, you don't have to go anywhere to find that.
Nope, and they were too focused on Timothy Taylor. Once they figured it out, they decided to charge Raymond Moody with obstruction of justice, hoping with him behind bars, they can make some progress in this case. They could have never imagined that Raymond would not only turn himself in for the obstruction of justice charge, but he would also right then and there confess to the murder of Brittany Drexel. According to Raymond, the night of April 25th, he and his girlfriend, Angel Voss, were driving around Myrtle Beach hunting for a girl to rape together. They spotted Brittany walking by herself and offered her a ride to her hotel, saying they were also tourists. Once in the car, Raymond pretended to be lost, so he pulled over to let his girlfriend Angel drive. Raymond then got into the back seat with Brittany and tied her up with a yellow rope. He told Brittany not to panic. All he was going to do was take her for ransom and then let her go once he got the money. They kept driving and ended up at the Pole Yard boat landing in Georgetown, where the couple had already had a tent pitched. Raymond then left Brittany and Angel at the tent and went back to his room at the lodge, fetching a briefcase full of sex toys. Once he returned, Raymond raped Brittany. According to him, he could not remember if Angel took part in the rape, but she was there, and she did not release Brittany, despite having the time to do so while he was gone. After the rape, Raymond strangled Brittany with that yellow rope in front of Angel. He then stabbed Brittany in the heart with an ice pick, wrapped her up in a sleeping bag,
Jeez.
and put her body in the trunk of the car. The couple then went back to their apartment to sleep for a bit before Raymond then took the body to bury it. He then spent the next few weeks slowly discarding of Brittany's items. That same night, he threw her cell phone into the North Santee River. He put her purse and wallet in a clothing donation box. He put her school ID in a marsh and threw the tent out onto a random road. The last item Raymond discarded was the ice pick, which he had kept for a couple of years before throwing it into a pond.
Dude, these people piss me off so much. Like the killers that can go and commit like the most heinous murder and then like take a nap or go like eat a meal.
Yeah, you think like even in their like sick mind, like they love doing it, like the you think like the adrenaline, the love of the game would keep
Yeah.
you up.
Yeah. The adrenaline that you have to feel from doing something like that in a bad way. And you can just like go about your day. It's just crazy.
I don't get
I'm glad we don't get it, but it's just like, what the f you know?
What the fuck? Raymond did not visit the site where he buried Brittany's body, but he remembered exactly where it was. And as soon as he gave this information to police, they descended upon the woods off a gated private road outside of Georgetown in full force. The excavation of the site took 3 days, but Brittany Drexel was finally found. The next day, she was positively identified using DNA and dental records. The public announcement that Brittany had been located came at the same time as investigators announced Raymond Moody's arrest and charges: murder, kidnapping, and first-degree sexual misconduct. On October 19th, 2022, Raymond pled guilty to all charges and was subsequently sentenced to life in prison with two additional consecutive terms of 30 years. And you may be wondering about little old girlfriend, Angel Voss, and you're going to be mad when you hear this.
Let me guess, she testified against him and got a lighter sentence.
Not quite. So Raymond was very open and weirdly like very remorseful about everything, which I'm glad he is. Makes things a little easier. But he told investigators how much Angel was involved. Her, on the other hand, not at all. She said she was being forced to kidnap Brittany at the direction of Raymond. She did not participate in the sexual assault, the murder, the concealment of the body. She didn't want anything to do with it. Raymond had a different story. He said that this was kind of her idea. And had texts saying that she had sent him saying she wanted to go hunting with him and she wanted to participate in the assault. Also, when he went back to his place to get that briefcase, Angel was alone with Brittany and kept her tied up.
Kylie, tell me what she got. What'd she get charged with?
One more thing. According to Raymond, Angel was the one who lured Brittany into the car. Authorities only charged Angel with lying to them. She pled guilty and she was sentenced to 18 years. That's it.
And oh, okay. Wow, what a dumb move.
And it's not like they charged her with the other things and she got off. They didn't even charge her with anything else.
How freaking stupid. You have a murderer running around out there that you just let go for no good reason. You didn't even get her to testify against him. I 100% believe him because why would he not tell the truth if he's completely remorseful?
Yeah, like he's been an open book this entire time. I mean, at least since he came forward.
I would expect for him more to be like, no, she didn't have anything to do with it. Like, don't go after her, blah, blah, blah. Nope, he's telling probably the truth. I believe all of that. That's bonkers.
Yep. And because she also pled guilty, there was no trial that you couldn't like press her on anything. She just stayed quiet.
Wow.
So she will be 75 when she gets out. Brittany's family, and I think all of us obviously want her to be at least charged with the kidnapping as well. I think that's the least we could
Yeah.
do.
It's the principle, yeah.
Brittany's mom, Dawn, did get one more win out of all this, successfully winning a lawsuit against Raymond Moody for intentional infliction of emotional distress. She was awarded, get this, Holly, $500 million in punitive damages and $200 million in actual damages. That's a big check, but
Yeah.
mind you, Raymond is in prison and has no way of earning money. Also, didn't really have that money before he went to prison. So that was the tragic story of the disappearance of Brittany Drexel, a young girl who just so happened to encounter two evil people while on vacation. The case took 13 years to solve and to locate Brittany, but perhaps it could have been solved sooner if investigators didn't get tunnel vision on the wrong guy.
Dang, how disappointing. I mean, I'm glad that they finally got the guy. What a terrible investigation. Sorry.
It was a bad one. Like, they had, he was one of their like first persons of interest.
Well, what a bad one, Kylie.
I'm so sorry.
Good job.
You see why I scrapped it? I'm just
What,
kidding.
no, it was a good bad one. It was a good bad one. I'm glad that it got solved at least, and the wrong person is not still sitting in jail. That's positive at least. So it was a good one.
Over time.
Let's hop into overtime. Should we go back over what we were talking about before we hopped on the episode about like what we're watching right now?
Yes.
Okay, I was having fun talking about that. So Kylie and I are both watching Handmaid's Tale, obviously. And I'm gonna finish the season finale, or as Kylie told me, the last episode ever. It's been, I feel like every, for the past maybe 2 seasons, every single episode has felt like a small movie. So I'm really sad to see it go. It's the first show that I've stuck with for a long time. I was telling Kylie I watched Grey's Anatomy when I was in high school and junior high, of course, and I just think it goes too long. I just think that they need to stop somewhere and just end series. It has to stop, you know?
That's why I like the like limited series.
Yeah,
Because
yeah.
it's longer than a movie, but or like White Lotus, where each season's a different story.
Which I still haven't watched.
That's insane.
I know. Everybody is on me about it. I just feel like I have to finish something before I can start something else.
I get that. I binge watched like an entire series. My goal this year was to go back and watch all the like top big shows I hadn't seen before. So like I did. I watched all of Lost. I gotta watch The Sopranos next.
Okay.
It's hard because I also have this thing every year I rewatch all of Gossip Girl.
That's a big commitment every year.
It is, but I love doing it
How long are you going to keep that going?
till they take it off of
Maybe
internet.
you
Maybe I should get the DVD box set.
the box set. You're going to be like a 70-year-old woman still watching this old like movie. It's going to be like black and white is to us. Now they'll have in the future like real like holograms of people you watch in a movie, and you're going to be putting that old DVD in there. Watching your Gossip Girl.
I'm gonna be sitting on my rocking chair on the porch with my grandkids in my lap, and I'm gonna tell them about this show where there's a anonymous blogger named Gossip Girl.
XOXO. You're
Gossip
like,
Girl.
oh, this is so cringy, Grandma.
Like
Shows
a
have to stop somewhere. Grey's Anatomy needs to be, it needs to end. Fast and Furious 27 needs to stop. Like, if we have to end things somewhere, or you lose like how good things are if you don't just like end it.
What is that soap opera that's still going on that's been on since like the 60s?
Is it Days of Our Lives?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that like my parents watched that and my grandparents, and it's still on, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, it's actually General Hospital, airing since 1963.
That's the longest one.
Yeah, there are over 15,000 episodes.
See, that's sickening. Maybe if maybe if every one of them is different, but like you can't it when the characters start getting old and you can see that they're aging, like in real life, it's time.
Think that's why in those shows all the characters die. Like Grey's Anatomy, I think I heard Shonda Rhimes say she has like a rule, like McDreamy would never leave Meredith, so he had to die because the actor was leaving, so he couldn't just like get a divorce and like go to a different hospital, you know?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Like there's certain characters they couldn't just like leave.
Yeah. We have to do something with like their lives. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kill them. Kill them off.
If that was like a real hospital and all the doctors were dying like that, there would be an investigation.
Oh yeah. It'd be the Tylenol murders, like you're saying.
A paranormal event. And we'll see you next week with another episode of Over My Dead Pod. Be sure to like, subscribe, leave us a review, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.